not a sprain or an itch. Pain, rash, swelling, or twitch. Call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. I call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
Want to hear something really scary?
The headline stated, man with first confirmed U.S. case of fast-spreading U.K. COVID-19 strain has no travel history. A Colorado National Guard member has the first reported U.S. case of a new and seemingly more contagious variant of the coronavirus that has set off alarms throughout Britain. And there's also a second case that's suspected in another Guard member.
What seems to make it worse is that the two were sent on December 23rd to work at a nursing home struggling with an outbreak of the virus in a small town outside Denver, Colorado.
A state laboratory has been notified of the mutation, which appears to have begun in England. Now, staff and residents at the nursing home who have tested positive for the coronavirus are having their samples screened for signs of the variant. So far, it seems that no evidence of it has been found.
Both cases that had turned up positive in Colorado with the suspected mutated COVID virus are in quarantine.
So the question is, how did this variant, the variant itself, get into the U.S. and added urgency to the nation's vaccination drive?
There seems to be very little known about the new coronavirus variant yet. However, the scientists in the United Kingdom are warning the world that it is significantly more contagious.
Of course, one of the first questions is which, if any, of the vaccines, including those already in distribution and those still in the lab, are effective against this particular strain. You know, I did hear in the media that the Moderna lab announced that the new strain is just as susceptible to their vaccine as the one they have tested. That's good news there.
So, without knowing where the two from Colorado got their mutant strain is disconcerting, to say the least. What if, for example, they did not get it passed to them from someone from out of their country?
Could this also be a new strain born here in the U.S.? So now the Colorado State Laboratory and the scientists are conducting contact tracing to determine its spread. We do want to mention that the scientists in Britain have found no evidence that this mutation is more lethal or causes more severe illness.
The British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, reported the weekend before Christmas that the variant was moving rapidly through London and southeast England.
France also briefly barred trucks from Britain before allowing them back in, providing the drivers get tested for the virus. And now Japan? Well, it's announced a ban on all non-resident foreigners, just as a precaution.
Remember that it is common for viruses to undergo minor changes as they reproduce and move through a population. New versions of the virus have been seen almost since it was first detected in China a year ago.
The fear, of course, is that mutations will become significant enough to defeat the vaccines. Already, South Africa has also discovered a highly contagious COVID-19 variant that is driving the country's latest spike of cases, hospitalizations, as well as deaths. Mutant COVID strains have triple transmission of the virus even during the November lockdown.
According to Professor Axel Gandhi, who is the chair in statistics at the Imperial College London, said the high rate of infection in the new coronavirus variant means that the rate of reproduction had been driven up by as much as 0.7.
And that means that the transmission of the disease in England was likely to have tripled even during England's November lockdown conditions. So basically, this variant spreads quicker.
What this all means is that the number of people infected on average per infected person in the future will be by about 0.4 to 0.7.
You know, that doesn't sound like much, but actually the difference is quite extreme. In scientific terms, the number of cases would increase by a factor of 3, so there is a huge difference in how easily this virus spreads.
One scientific officer in England said that the new variant contained 23 different genetic changes, many associated with parts of the virus which control how it binds to human cells.
And more than 60% of new infections in London were now accounted for by the new variant. So we'll have to stay tuned to see just what this portends for us here in the United States. As we have mentioned in earlier radio shows this year, COVID is not the only infectious disease that affects millions. In fact, the parasitic disease malaria, carried to humans by the bite of the Anopheles mosquito, caused about 435,000 deaths each year, primarily in young children in sub-Saharan Africa. Remember that malaria has been attacking apes since prehistoric times, right through to the humans in the 21st century.
For thousands of years, traditional herbal remedies have been used to treat malaria. The first effective treatment for malaria came from the bark of the cinchona tree, which contains quinine.
Again, we must keep in mind that malaria, the disease, continues to afflict some 200 million patients each year. Again, think of that, 200 million patients. And despite a long-term global response, efforts to control the disease are hampered by the rise of drug-resistant strains of the parasite species that causes malaria.
Sulfadoxin, pyrimethamine, goes by the brand name Fansidar, for example, was once a first-line anti-malaria treatment, but now primary is used to prevent infection in pregnant women and children.
Mutations in 3 genes in the parasite cause the resistance to the medication. New studies disclosed at least 10 different versions of this 3rd gene that was discovered, which occurs in about 1/4 of the samples from Southeast Asia and in about 1/3 of the samples from Africa, where the strains carrying the mutations may just be on the rise right now. For a little lighter subject, but important nevertheless, is a product that I really learned about 50 years ago. In fact, the first to introduce it to me was, at that time, my future wife, Carmen, who at the time worked in a pharmacy. I complained of pain after playing several hours of a Mexican game that's a cross between tennis and handball. It's called front tennis. I was visiting Carmen at her pharmacy, and she brought to me a cream that had a very distinctive fragrance, really quite unique. The muscle cream contained an active ingredient called arnica.
Now, arnica has been used for centuries to help treat sprains, strains, bruises, connective tissue conditions, stiffness, and even to help heal post-surgical incisions.
Now, arnica does come in ointments, gels, as well as creams. And according to WebMD, research shows that arnica gel, used twice daily for 3 weeks, reduces the pain and stiffness associated with osteoarthritis of the hand and knee. And other studies have found that the same gel may work as well, or even better than, in some cases, ibuprofen, to reduce discomfort and improve movement of the hands. And arnica is often used in treating bruises.
A study was done on people who had surgery to remove wrinkles showed that arnica significantly boosted healing.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just 2 blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office.
We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. 1111, Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
Now let's talk about some of the top discoveries and medical breakthroughs over the past 2 years. Dr. Christopher Sweeney, who's an oncologist at Boston's Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, led a trial in which the drug enzalutamide was used to attempt to stop the growth of cancer cells. It is known as an androgen receptor inhibitor that stops the growth of cancer cells and was being used in conjunction with testosterone suppression to treat metastasized prostate cancer.
At this point in the research, Dr. Sweeney has seen a handful of deep remissions. He also stated that the results were positive sooner than they anticipated.
The study was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. What else is amazing? Well, how about a blood test for breast cancer? Researchers at the University of Nottingham in England have created a blood test that could potentially detect breast cancer up to 5 years even before a lump or other symptoms appear.
The test, which would be much cheaper and easier to conduct than a mammogram, looks for autoantibodies. These are produced by the body in reaction to cancer cells in the blood.
There's also a similar test for lung cancer currently being studied in Scotland. The new drug, Trikafta, is a triple combination therapy that was found to cause significant improvements in cystic fibrosis patients by improving their respiratory health and lung function.
Trikafta is now available to patients 12 and older who have the most common cystic fibrosis mutation, which could affect almost 90% of people with the disease, or about 27,000 people in the U.S.
Lots of people suffer from Alzheimer's disease, and lots of researchers are working on drugs to prevent as well as cure the disease. The new drug with the potential to help those with Alzheimer's disease is called aducanumab.
After 18 months of taking the drug, participants showed lower cognitive decline on both memory and cognitive ability tests compared to a placebo. These results were published in the journal Nature.
There is something that many have been excited, or should we say super excited about, and that is a new gene editing tool called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R. It actually is allowing scientists to modify DNA and genes. The letters, I think, stand for clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats. Now, that's a mouthful, but really it's a genetic engineering technique in molecular biology by which the genomes of living organisms may be modified.
That technique is considered highly significant in biotechnology and medicine as it allows for the genomes to be edited in vivo with extremely high precision, cheaply and with ease.
It can be used in the creation of new medicines, agricultural products, and genetically modified organisms, or as a means of controlling pathogens and pests. And it also has possibilities in the treatment of inherited genetic diseases, as well as diseases arising from somatic mutations, such as cancer. However, its use in human germline genetic modifications is simply highly controversial at this point.
The best way to describe the technique is that it works like genetic scissors, opening both strands of the targeted sequence of DNA to introduce a modification by one of two methods.
With the discovery of CRISPR, efficient and highly selective editing is now, well, it's now a reality. And these CRISPR editing techniques have many potential applications, as we said, and these include medicines and agriculture.
Some of its proposed innovations, including destroying superbugs, eradicating malaria, and curing HIV, are still quite far off, probably.
Still, the entire subject is exciting. For example, a patient has been successfully treated for sickle cell disease using the technology and clinical trials using CRISPR to treat cancers such as non-Hodgkin's lymphoma are currently recruiting volunteers. Now, he also just mentions sickle cell anemia. The first patient in an ongoing clinical trial for sickle cell disease, Manny Johnson, age 22, who used to require monthly blood transfusions, has been symptom-free for more than a year after undergoing treatment in Boston.
and another sufferer, Janiel Stevenson, 28 years old, reported showing no signs of sickle cell anemia after undergoing a year-long treatment in D.C.
The treatment uses a novel gene therapy treatment with an infusion of the patient's own reworked bone marrow to help the body produce normal red blood cells consistently. When I was young, most people did not worry about peanut allergies. But this problem has been burgeoning over the past several decades. But now there are maybe some hope for people with deadly peanut allergy. A new study out of Stanford University showed that after just one injection of the antibody etokimab, which is already being studied to treat other immune issues such as asthma and eczema, has helped people with severe peanut allergies who are then able to eat peanuts just 2 weeks after treatment.
Right now, the only available treatment for the potentially deadly allergy is oral immunotherapy, where patients eat small doses in graduating scales under medical care.
Unfortunately, this process can take up to a year and can cause allergic reactions. Last week we talked about cancers and left off by debunking several myths about cancer. Before we get into those, for whatever reason, I asked myself, if we can debunk myths, can we also bunk myths? Never having heard anyone mention that, I looked up debunk and its antonyms, looking for the word bunk. Oddly, or maybe not so oddly, the list of antonyms included confirm, establish, prove, validate, and verify. Sadly, it did not contain the word bunk. Now, it did mention that bunk means nonsense. In fact, we started using bunk at the beginning of the 20th century. And even more interesting is how that word got born. The word bunk seems to have been derived from a remark made by a Buncombe County, North Carolina congressman. Then, just about 25 years later, the word debunk was first used in print for the act of taking the bunk out of something.
So, even though we do not, in our present-day modern speech, use the word bunk as the opposite to debunk, that is what we are trying to do here.
We are trying to debunk or bunk myths concerning cancer. One myth is that antiperspirants or deodorants can cause breast cancer. Do they? The best studies so far have found no evidence linking the chemicals typically found in antiperspirants and deodorants with changes in breast tissue. The same goes for hair dye. Does it increase the risk of cancer?
Again, there is no convincing scientific evidence that personal hair dye use increases the risk of cancer.
However, and here's the bunk, some studies suggest, however, that hairdressers and barbers who are regularly exposed to large quantities of hair dye and other chemical products may actually have an increased risk of bladder cancer. For the last of these myths concerning cancer, let me leave you with this one. Will cancer get worse if exposed to air? No, exposure to air will not make any tumors grow faster or cause cancer to spread to other parts of the body. I said that was the last, but we got a couple more, and Carmen's going to tell us about one.
How about the myth that microwaving food in plastic containers and wraps releases harmful cancer-causing substances? The fact is that plastic containers and wraps labeled are safe for use in the microwave, don't pose a threat.
But be aware that there is some evidence that plastic containers that aren't intended for use in the microwave could melt and potentially leak chemicals into your food.
And you really should avoid microwaving plastic containers that were never intended for the microwave, such as margarine tubs, takeout containers, or whipped topping bowl.
So I guess you should really check to see that any container you use in the microwave is labeled as microwave safe. Don't assume it.
And finally, the myth that people who have cancer shouldn't eat sugar since it can cause cancer to grow faster. More research is needed to understand the relationship between sugar in the diet and cancer.
Remember that all kinds of cells, including cancer cells, depend on blood sugar for energy. But giving more sugar to cancer cells doesn't make them grow faster. And also depriving cancer cells of sugar doesn't make them grow more slowly. So how did this misconception come into being?
It could be because of a misunderstanding of positron emission tomography. or PET scans. These scans use a small amount of radioactive tracer, which is normally a form of glucose or sugar.
All tissues in your body absorb some of the tracer, but tissues that are using more energy, including cancer cells, absorb greater amounts. And it's for this reason that many people have concluded that cancer cells grow faster on sugar. But again, it just isn't true.
There is some evidence that consuming large amounts of sugar is associated with an increased risk of certain cancers, including esophageal cancer.
And as we said last week, eating too much sugar can also lead to weight gain and increase the risk of obesity and diabetes, which may increase the risk of cancer. Over the course of the next few weeks, we will talk about even more discoveries in medicine. These include gene therapy for hemoglobinopathies, new drugs for multiple sclerosis, smartphone-connected pacemaker devices, and new medications for cystic fibrosis.
We will start today with a new approved fixed-dose combination medication that has vastly improved hepatitis C treatment.
In fact, it is more than 90% effective for hepatitis C genotypes 1 to 6. This treatment represents really an effective option for a wider scope of patients with the disease.
Hepatitis C is a major public health issue in the United States. More than 3.2 million Americans are infected, according to the CDC. Yet, as many as 75% are not even aware that they carry the virus.
The number of acute hepatitis C cases reported in the population, this is interesting, more than tripled between 2010 and 2016. And more deaths are attributed to hepatitis C than from all 60 other reported infectious diseases combined.
Remember that hepatitis means inflammation of the liver. So, when the liver is inflamed or damaged, its function can be affected.
What causes it? Well, heavy alcohol use, toxins, and certain medical conditions can all cause hepatitis. However, hepatitis is often caused by a virus. Now, in the United States, the most common hepatitis viruses are, aptly named, hepatitis A, B, and C. The liver infections caused by these three viruses can show very similar symptoms, but they affect the liver and are spread in different ways.
Hepatitis A is usually a short-term infection, while hepatitis B and C are more likely to remain in the body and cause chronic infection.
Yes, there are vaccines to prevent hepatitis A as well as hepatitis B, but there is no vaccine for hepatitis C. And hepatitis C is spread through contact with blood from an infected person. The vast majority who suffer from hepatitis C today become infected with the hepatitis C virus by sharing needles or other equipment used to prepare and inject drugs. Remember that chronic hepatitis C can result in serious and even life-threatening health problems like liver failure, cirrhosis, and liver cancer.
People with chronic hepatitis C often have no symptoms and don't feel sick. But when symptoms appear, they often are a sign of advanced liver disease.
In 2016, a new medication brought widespread treatment opportunities via the ability to treat all six major genotypes of this disease. Sofosbuvir, velpatasvir. Now that's a fixed-dose combination medication.
It is more than 90% effective for hepatitis C genotypes 1 through 6 and inhibits proteins that play a key role in hepatitis C RNA replication. With the therapy, most people take just one pill once a day for 12 weeks.
Next week, apart from some more amazing new discoveries of 2020, we will talk about an organ which we all have, the pancreas. This organ produces insulin for sugar control, as well as enzymes that are necessary.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. And we hope you had a wonderful new year. Goodbye.